Welcome to Game On with Grace, where we're not just talking cricket wins and losses, we're talking off-field antics, guilty pleasures, and the drive that never quits. Hey everyone, it's Grace Hayden, and today we're joined by a true giant of the modern game. Literally and figuratively, standing at 6'7", he's a dominant all-rounder and a former West Indian captain who's led his team on the biggest stages, including a World Cup. And he's made history across formats as a bowler, batter, and leader. Now he's bringing his talents to new frontiers, playing in the Abu Dhabi T10, captaining the Los Angeles Knight Riders in Major League Cricket, and so much more. Can't wait to get into this chat with Jason Holder. Game on. Jason, welcome to Game On with Grace. So stoked to have you on, mate. Where are you joining from in the world right now?
Hey, Grace. Nice to be here. I'm actually over in the Abu Dhabi T10. So yeah, in Abu Dhabi and trying to enjoy it.
Nice. Have you been to Abu Dhabi before?
Oh, heaps of times, man. This is like a fortress for me, I guess. You know, I pretty much come here 2-3 times a year these days, the amount of cricket I've played here. So yeah, I'm not a stranger to this part of the world. And yeah, I'm just looking to enjoy the couple of weeks that I have over here.
It's crazy where cricket takes you now, hey? Like, honestly, there's places that you never thought that cricket would touch. And then now these days, you're not surprised by any place in the world, right?
Yeah, exactly, man. To see, especially from when I started playing cricket, well, international cricket in 2012 till now, like a whole lot has changed, man. And it's just amazing the growth the game has had, and the places of obviously the associate nations that come into cricket have broadened the perspective and horizon on cricket. So it's good to see that cricket has reached this part of the world and continuously growing, which is really good for the game. I'm just hoping that, you know, we can have a few more full member nations and probably expand the traveling portfolio of cricket. And we know it probably doesn't need expanding, the amount of travels that we have, but it's still good to grow the game and to see it in different places of the world.
Let's get into the first segment. This is called Game On Icebreakers. Now, we all know that athletes are super competitive, but I'm just going to, you know, test where you're at because everyone's a little bit different. All right, first question. Can you give me something that, or a time maybe, where you were a little bit too competitive off the field? So something in day-to-day life or, you know, you're with your mates and it's just kind of a fun game that you've turned a little bit too much competitive energy into.
Yeah, everybody who knows me knows I'm a very competitive person. Something that just distinctly comes to mind is on the golf course. You know, I'm pretty close with a few of my mates back at home in Barbados, and, you know, we get pretty competitive. And there's always a debate with who gets how many shots and, you know, who doesn't get shots. And it gets pretty heated at times because we literally be on the first tee for at least another extra 15 minutes deciding, you know, how many shots this person gets or how many shots that person gets. But it's always a nice time because I love competitive golf. I just really don't enjoy recreation. I just willingly golf. Let's just casual golf. I don't enjoy it. It doesn't really do much for me. I love playing for something. And yeah, I mean, I can remember a couple of times being on the first tee and you're debating how much money to bet as well too. Because yeah, we do have a friendly wager, but that particular time it wasn't a real friendly wager. That you got a little heated debating the shots. So then it got a little bit heavier than we would have imagined. So yeah, those are, I guess that's one of the things that comes to mind when I think about the competitive nature of myself. Yeah, you just end up probably betting a little bit more than you had bargained for initially.
It hurt a little bit more when the loss came through. You were like touching your pockets going, oh God, what have I got myself into here?
Now, sometimes my hands can't reach my pockets, so it doesn't really bother me. But but in all, man, I enjoy it. I just thoroughly enjoy it. It's always fun taking money off your pals.
Oh, for sure, especially when you're winning. But golf is one of those really, you know, I guess games where you can be really on your game one day and so off it the next.
Yeah, I guess that's the beauty about it, man. You can have a great day where you carry, like you beat all your mates, you beat them front, back and overall if you're doing it that way. And then you can have a day where you can just have a total off day and just lose everything. And I guess that's where everything's leveled out, which is why I really enjoy it, you know, because one day you can be switched on and you could be really on, and then next day it could just be the total opposite. So it's frustrating, yes, but I mean, it still levels up the playing field so that everybody can have a chance to have a piece of the pie, for lack of a better phrase. But yeah, I don't enjoy losing. So that's not very, very much fun, you know, when you lose to your close mates.
Righto. Let's go into our next question. This is the last question in this segment. Is there one friend, family member, or person that you know that you absolutely hate losing to?
They're two close buddies of mine. And we play a lot of golf together. One is Shamar Brooks, a former West Indies player. We live together in Barbados. We play heaps of golf together, and we are very, very competitive. So anytime losing to him, I honestly hate it, because I believe that he is a better golfer than me, but I still believe I should be beating him more often than he beats me. So anytime he beats me, then it's always a case where I get really upset, and it's hard to really channel that. But we go at each other very hard on the golf course, and it's actually quite fun to behold. But the other guy is a guy who I met, and within the last, I would say, 5 years, he moved to Barbados a few years ago, and you know, we've gotten pretty close. A guy called Nick Blackman. He's a former Premier League footballer who lives in Barbados as well now. So Nick and I, we go at it, you know, quite a bit as well too. So those two boys are guys who I spend a lot of time with. My other guy is Sean Eady. So I think myself, Sean Eady, Nick Blackman, you know, we've got pretty intense games. And then I've got my little Chinese partner, a guy called Adam Truss, who we go at against a few of these boys and rile them up. So it's always good fun when we tee it up. Yeah, I love golf, man. I spend so much time on the golf course, probably more time on the golf course these days than on a cricket field. So yeah, when I'm on the golf course, let's make it competitive.
You sound like every cricketer, honestly. You guys are just golf obsessed. Not going to lie, I am also obsessed at the moment too. It's so good. I was hitting balls today. I've got a tournament that I'm playing in Brisbane next week, and I haven't hit a ball in a while because I've been traveling, and I'm like, oh God, I cannot be bad. Like, this is not in my vocabulary. I need to get into some lessons. I need to be hitting balls every day. So I've definitely got the bug as well.
So what's your handicap then?
I'm not telling you because you're going to judge me. What's yours?
No. I'm just trying to decipher if I can bet you and have a good game with you, man.
Well, I'm highly competitive, so I reckon we'd have some fun, for sure. I reckon we put a couple of like little snacks, little drinks on the buggy, get a good gang together, and then we'd be off. I mean, the tournaments we go to, honestly, they've got the most elite golf courses around the corner, so I reckon we'd be on.
I'll hold you to that, man. I'll see you. But I'm not going to play if you've got coming off on these bogus handicaps. But we'll see.
Whatever. I'm just a girl. You got to remember that.
That could be the biggest decoy in the world in terms of you trying to just stiff me and take my money. But we'll see.
All right. It's time for a quick break. Stick around and we'll be right back with Human Behind the Heart. All right, let's get into our second segment. This is called Human Behind the Hype. So we get to know you a little bit more than just your stats and your scores. A little delve deeper. We're not going to go too deep. I'm not going to make you cry or anything, but we're just going to hit behind the surface a little bit.
Cool, let's get it.
So I want to know What were you like as a youngster, Jason? How would you describe yourself as young little mini you?
When I was younger, I was always very, very chatty, very talkative, full of energy, usually the life of the party, still am, but just happy-go-lucky, just jovial, just as fun as you could possibly imagine, man. I don't think I've changed. I always tell people, like, the older I get is like the younger I get, because I just, the inner child in me just can't leave me, man. I just have heaps of fun and I just love a good laugh. So, like, that's like my fondest childhood memories, just running around, you know, having fun, not being too serious about life, and just enjoying it, man. I always tell my friends, life's for living, man, and don't you ever forget it, because the moment you forget it, then you might as well not be living. So I guess that's it in a nutshell for me when I describe my earlier days in life.
Totally. What was it like growing up in Barbados? It's such a beautiful place. Honestly, you're so lucky.
As you said, I'm blessed, man. But growing up in Barbados is the absolute best thing that I could have ever imagined, you know, when I was blessed with life. Barbados is heaven, man. I enjoy Barbados. I love Barbados with all of my heart. I love the people. I love the culture, just how beautiful our island is, and how so many people come to the island to enjoy what we've got. And growing up in Barbados was phenomenal for me. I couldn't imagine another place to grow up in the world. I wouldn't change anything about my childhood. I just love the fact that I could run in the streets, play in the streets, play at school. Then you still got our lovely beaches you can go to find a nice cricket game, or, you know, or even just spend the entire day. I mean, we look forward to bank holidays because that's where everybody goes to. That's the beach. Growing up in Barbados is the best thing that I can imagine. I would not change it for the world, man. I love Barbados with all my heart.
Yeah, for sure. Where did cricket start for you?
Yeah, started at school. I didn't have any family members who were directly involved in cricket. My mom's dad passed away the same year I was born, but I was told that he was into cricket a bit. But apart from him, there are none of my other immediate family members who I know of being into cricket. All my family was into basketball, obviously with the hype. I grew to love and passion by playing at school, at primary school. And then obviously seeing it on TV, I really enjoyed it. And yeah, I just realized I was pretty good from a young age as well. I've been one of those fortunate cricketers to come straight through the age group programs and, you know, just elevated myself gradually from step to step. So I played at every level. I've played on a 13, 15, 17, 19, West Indies A, Barbados senior team, West Indies A, and then into West Indies senior team. So I've come through the system. And yeah, I guess from a young age, I knew I was a little bit better than most. I just rode on that, to be honest.
I mean, you've produced as a, I guess, country, so many amazing cricketers over the time. Did you have any idols or inspirations growing up?
Oh, without a doubt. Brian Lara is my number one idol growing up. Curtly Ambrose and Courtney Walsh are the other two that really stand out for me. And it's just seeing Curtly Ambrose and Courtney Walsh bowling tandem. For me, that's what I grew up seeing. And those are the two bowlers that stand out for me. So when I see them, I have the utmost respect for them because of what they've done for me personally, but also for the broader nation of West Indies. And then just seeing Brian Lara break record after record, you know, and for me, I sometimes have to pinch myself because I've gotten really close to Brian in recent years. And to build a relationship that I've built with him, I picked his brain on a number of occasions as well too. It's almost like a wow moment for me, you know, seeing Brian Lara play cricket as I was growing up and him being a massive inspiration to me personally, but now being, you know, in his space, having chats with him, spending time with him on the golf course, and also so off the golf course, you know, just one of those wow moments. And, you know, oftentimes I have to pinch myself to actually see if it's real. But yeah, those are my early memories, and those are the people who really inspired me to be where I'm at now.
Yeah, it'd be pretty cool to go, I idolized you growing up, now we're mates. Like, what is this?
100%, man. It's one of those things where, like, you only really appreciate what you've got when you really, really have it in front of you. And you're saying to yourself, that's something I never thought would have happened. So, I mean, growing up, I never probably thought I would have met Brian Lara. I never thought I would probably play for West Indies. But, you know, here I am now playing for West Indies, you know, interacting with all the greats and legends that played the game before me. And, you know, just growing, just really, really growing alongside them.
Who was the one person that sort of believed in you before you really believed in yourself that, yeah, cricket's my sport. I'm going to take this on. I'm going to get to the next level and succeed here?
That's a very difficult question. But I'll tell you two moments that I really are two people that sit well with me in my heart is one, my father. And that's because my dad, the support he showed me as a youngster was just next to none. Because, I mean, he had a lot more flexibility in his job. So he was able to get off work and come and see me play. But he wouldn't miss a game. So him traveling around to see me play every single game that I've had, you know, was something special. Because I felt like one stage, like, you're kind of probably wasting your time just traveling and watching me play cricket. You know what I mean? You've seen, I could understand you coming to one or two games, but he never missed one, you know. And his dad was my grandfather, obviously. He would come around and watch a few of my games as well, too.
So amazing. You had so many great role models in your life, both family members, but then also coaches that obviously saw potential in you as well.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I mean, it's the biggest blessing I could look back on and really appreciate, to be honest.
All right, it's time for a word from our sponsors. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back in just a sec. You fell into a captaincy role, though, really early in your career for most, you know, captains that have, you know, gone on to lead their country. But you were also in a difficult position because you were so young in that role, but you had so many of those, not older generation, but, you know, more experienced players that were in the side. How did you manage that new trajectory in your career?
Yeah, captaincy, man. Yeah, I look back on it and I scratch my head. I smile to myself. I pat myself on the back. Because it was one of the most unimaginable experiences I could have had. I've obviously captained youth teams before, but if I went, I mean, part of me taking the captaincy was based on the fact that I had led teams before. And leading a youth team before, leading a club team, is something totally different to leading the West Indies cricket team. And I always tell people, had I known...
I can imagine.
No. Yeah, had I known now what I knew, sorry, had I known before what I knew now, maybe I would not have taken the captaincy, because it is so much more than just taking 11 guys onto the cricket field. I mean, 100%. The amount of political stuff that I had to deal with, managing the players, managing their wants, managing their needs, and then trying to be that middleman between them.
Managing your game.
I mean, yeah, and that's a point that I'm going to get to. Like, trying to manage my game again was something that I pushed aside, which hurt me in the end. And I had to really wake up and understand that, look, if I'm not managing my game and at the top of my game, then there's no captaincy. You know, so I was at the point where I was fighting so many battles off the field, and it became so draining. So, so draining. And I think for me as a young man, trying to find his way in his international career, it probably wasn't the best thing for me at that point. But again, in hindsight, I think it's made me into the individual that I am today. Like, I've grown so much. I've learned so much. I've had to become a man at such a young age. I wasn't one of those players who could really feel their way into international cricket and take a gradual progression to being a senior player within the dressing room. I had to really grow up one time and be a senior man from the very beginning. And yeah, looking back on it was challenging, but it's taught me so many things in life that I still hold. I still use to this day. But yeah, I mean, taking on the captaincy at 23 was tough. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the challenges. The bad days were very bad. The lean patches were very lean and tough, dark. And maybe I needed a psychologist at that time, but didn't have one and had to find ways to push through. But me being able to still stand here and, you know, have a pretty successful career, I'm very, very blessed and happy, you know, to be able to deal with and put aside all the different peripheral noise and distractions to still get, you know, a few decent performances behind my back. And yeah, I'm proud of myself for what I've achieved. Could it have been better? Yes. Could I have done more? Yes. Are there things in my career that I would like to change? And I'm probably Dover, yes. But I'm sure if you ask every cricketer that, they'll say the same thing. Or if you ask anybody in life that, they'll probably say the same thing. So you live and you learn, you grow, you try to appreciate the mistakes that you've made. But the biggest thing I always tell people is just try to learn from mistakes. Mistakes are there to be made. You will make mistakes. But I think the key lessons in mistakes is learning from them. And if you don't learn from them and you keep repeating the same mistakes over and over, then that's kind of insane to me.
Totally. How much did that impact you coming out of that captaincy role and sort of like having to find your feet, I guess, outside of that position?
Yeah, when I lost the captaincy, it was a dark time for me again. And not because I wasn't captain anymore. I've always said to people, like, these positions only last for a period of time. So you got to appreciate and understand that you're only there for a period of time. But the most disappointing thing about the whole incident was how it was dealt with. And I was so upset with how things had transpired. Again, losing the captaincy was nothing. I expected to lose it at some point. And yeah, whenever the time came, I would have accepted it and moved on. But how it happened and then how it was relayed, how it was transferred to me was just absolutely poor, man. And yeah, I felt so bad afterwards. It took me a long time to get over it. Again, I probably needed a psychologist then, which I didn't have. And I had to find my own coping mechanisms. But it took me a while to just fit back into the dressing room as just a player. I felt like I lost respect of a lot of people. And people didn't see me the same way as they did when I was captain. And it showed me, again, who was who and how people viewed me. What I understood about the whole instance is that a lot of people are not as genuine as they may come across. And a lot of people respect the position, but not the man. You know, people respect the captain, people respect the leader, because at the end of the day, that's a decision maker. But when you take that away take the title away from the character, and you just leave the character, it then shows you how people really view you and how people really value or devalue you as an individual. And those are the kind of things that I had to deal with and try to make sense of, but also like comprehend and understand and just pack away.
Yeah, I mean, it really shows how sport, you know, I think through outsider looking in, people go, oh, it's really not that lonely of a path. Like, you're around your mates, you're having a great time, you're in this great role, you know, you're captaining your country. But it can be really lonely in both positions of going, yeah, I'm captaining my country, but you, I guess, would have to be quite guarded with who you do trust. But then when you are out of that role, as you were just saying before, that, you know, who is actually my friend and who was respecting me just because of my title and who was respecting me for the person that I am? You know, it's I could imagine being so, so tough to really figure out, you know, who you can trust, who you really, how to navigate life, I guess, also.
Yeah, 100%, man. Like, there's so many fake people in this world, and I'm sure you would know that. But I think it's really good to have a trusty or a good friend circle that you can really fall back on, because at the end of the day, those are the people who matter most to you and who understand you and value you most for who you are. And again, thank God for my friends, man. We were able to laugh it off. We were able to just take my mind completely off of cricket. And I guess that's why I play so much golf as well, too, because when I play golf, I think nothing about cricket. And for me, golf is something just to take my mind completely off the game. And these days, now that I've gotten a lot older, the time that I have off, I do nothing related to cricket. Obviously, when you're looking to get back into the game, yeah, you'll prepare maybe a week or week and a half before you're ready to travel. And then that's it. You keep your body in shape. Obviously, you would do some gym. But when it comes to cricket-related stuff, I'm not one now to be going and doing a whole set of stuff. I mean, a lot of it now is just muscle memory. You get a little bit of rhythm, whether it be batting or bowling, and you just prepare and go off to whatever tour you have coming up. But for me, I just like to take my mind, my body, my soul completely off of cricket, because if I don't, I will burn out, and I probably wouldn't last as long as I want to last in playing in on the circuit or international cricket for that matter.
Well, it's time for Sports Roundtable. Now, this part of the podcast is we talk about all things sport and what you kind of up to right now, and maybe a touch on a few other sports as we go. But you're currently in Abu Dhabi. You're playing Abu Dhabi T10 right now. You've won your first two games. How good's that? You must be feeling pretty high.
100%, man. Like, Abu Dhabi T10 is honestly one of the best tournaments a cricketer could ever play in. And I say that simply because, one, it doesn't chew up an entire day. Like, I could literally wake up, play golf, come back, have a nap, go play a game, come back from the game, and go to dinner. Like, you can do all of that all in one day. Whereas if I play a T20 match, or if I play a one-day match, maybe a test match, you can't do any of that. It just chews up so much more of your time. So I love it. And it's fast, it's good, it's entertaining. It could be punishing, yes, but I think it's a format where you just don't dwell on things, because at some points you expect to get smacked. At some points you expect not to score 200-plus strike rate. So just one of those games that you just let your instincts take over and just play it and enjoy it. You know, I love it. So yeah, like that's where I'm at now. It is the best format for me because it just doesn't chew up my entire day.
It's a paid holiday, mate. What are you saying?
Well, I didn't really want to put it that way, but I'm glad that you said it, and I would have it on record to say that Grace Hayden said it's a paid holiday.
I'll do it for you. It's a paid holiday. And
I'll just write on your comment, man.
For you boys, anyway. I'm saying for you boys.
Well, I'd say for everybody. But
us, I mean, presenters, we're at the ground early.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, presenters and commentators, we get it tough. It's a tough life.
I sympathize with you, but I don't envy you. Fair enough.
Now, the toughest part of our gig is when we interview you guys post-match, and we can tell you, you're like, okay, I do not want to talk to you right now. Can you please stop with your questions? I just want to leave the ground. I've done my job. I just now want to go to my elite dinner, experience the city, and this chick here is just here making me stand for a little bit longer than I have to. I can feel your energy, so don't give me that.
Not me. Me personally, I love talking to you guys because you guys ask me 1,001 of the same questions and I get to respond 1,002 different ways. And it's like, well, okay. She's
paid. It's a little bit of a puzzle for you. Great. I'll keep that in mind.
I mean, for me, it's like she's paid to ask questions. I'm paid to answer the questions. But it's not like we actually answer anything different than we usually answer. And, you know, cricket is one of those sports where, I mean, that's why somebody like American sport. I like American sports so much because these guys are allowed to just say what they really want to say. I mean, they're allowed to curse. They're allowed to, you know, I mean, you may pay a little bit of a fine, but like, it's not frowned upon in a sense. Like, for me, American sport is more into the real world. And I think cricket needs to get there, man. Like, you get so many people toeing the line and, you know, just being so scared to actually say what they really want to say because they get in trouble or they offend this person or they offend that person. That's why I love American sport, man. I love to see the press conferences in American sport. I love to see NBA players just speak freely.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it?
It's great. Then you look at their podcast that they have on that end of the
world. World-class entertainment.
Yeah, and they just talk the talk, man. And then that's where it should be. That's where the entertainment is. That's part of it. But we in cricket, I don't think we've gotten there yet. Hopefully, I hope before I finish playing cricket, we get there. Because there are a few things that I would love to get off my chest.
Just add a bit of spice into cricket. Why not? I mean, we're expanding into the US. So, I mean, I think it could go there. It definitely could go there.
Grace, I'll tell you what. My thing is just to create my own little podcast and just talk your talk. Like, just say what's on your mind. But again, how many people would I actually get on the podcast to come and say what they want to say without thinking that they'll be victimized or, you know, offend certain people, offend the ICC? And, you know, I think that we need to stop being so fickle and stop being so, you know, bossy and just allow players, yes, not to be disrespectful, but be honest.
Totally. Totally. I mean, yeah, it's I guess it's finding that balance, as you say, of not being disrespectful, but like also, I guess you do have we've earned a right to also have your own opinion and free reign like the US does. And we've definitely got a huge US-based audience here on Willow who are backing the podcast, Game On With Grace, which we love. But tell me your favorite US sport that you are into.
Oh, my favorite US sport by far the NBA. I watch NBA religiously every single night. or I would just, if I can't watch it, I just pay attention to the scores. But I'm a big, big NBA fan. I've been to quite a few games. LeBron James is my guy. I've loved him from the first day he stepped foot in the NBA. And I had one of my bucket lists ticked off last year when I went to, well, last year, earlier this year, actually, when I went to see him in Orlando. So, yeah, LeBron's my guy. Love LeBron to bits. And I finally got to see him. And then, funny enough, I was supposed to see Steph Curry the following night because I went to a Miami Heat game. And they were, Warriors were playing the Heat, but unfortunately he was injured and he didn't play on that day. So I've got to see Steph play now and then. A few other NBA players I need to go see.
Oh, well, you're playing in Major League Cricket and you're captaining for LA. So surely you got a few more seasons of that under your belt and you can meet him. How's that like? What's MLC like? What do you love most about that tournament?
You know what I love most about the MLC is just seeing a different demographic cricket, like seeing a different, like stadiums, like the whole set. Like we played in San Francisco in the baseball stadium. And though I hated it, it was a different dynamic. I hated it only because of the dimensions of the ground. And I felt like it was a little bit unfair sometimes for bowlers to.
What was it like? What were the dimensions?
Yeah, it was like a bit of a box, man. Like you had different pockets, some very, very short pockets. There were no long parts of the boundaries, and it was just unforgiving as a bowler. Like you got guys could literally pat a ball and it would go into the stands for six. And I just felt it was a bit unfair. But again, it brought a different perspective. It brought a different look. But I just like the fact that we're playing in the US. I mean, I've had the privilege of being able to go over to the US a few times and seeing different states. And yeah, like I enjoy the cricket in Dallas. I think Dallas has got a beautiful stadium. They've got a decent fan base there. And I think the game is only growing a little bit more. So I would love to see cricket a bit more in Dallas. I heard in Morrisville that you get a pretty good crowd there. And the atmosphere is pretty good. And the stadium has a bit of a vibe. I think for me, where the MLC is at the minute, I think they should focus more on getting that crowd interaction and getting that interest into the game from that perspective, rather than looking for these perfect stadiums to play and that could host, let's say, 10 to 15,000 people, and you can only probably seat 3,000 people. It looks a little bit odd. I'd much rather you have 5,000 people and you make it into a decent stadium, and it brings a bit more of an atmosphere. Like, for instance, I see cricket in Nepal. And every single time I see cricket in Nepal, I'm just enthused to go to Nepal to play cricket because all of the games are sold out, packed with energy. And that's the game. That's the way the game is going to grow. That's the way, as a cricketer, when I step on the field, I'd much rather play in front of a full crowd or close to a full crowd than playing a really nice stadium with, a third of a crowd. To me, it doesn't really sit well with me. That's why I was struggling during the COVID. But yeah, I love the MLC. This year was my first year playing it. I really enjoyed it. And yeah, I look forward to the tournaments ahead. And I only hope that the game continues to grow over there. Because it's a good market to get into, obviously. American market is a big market. As we know, American sport is pretty huge. And I think if we can grow it there, then yeah, that's the sky's limit over there for cricket.
You know what was crazy for me is when I was going to the World Cup and it was split between America and the West Indies, and I flew into New York and customs, you know, they ask you when you give them your passport, what are you coming for? And I said, oh, the cricket. And he goes, oh, you know, I've heard about that cricket thing. Like, yeah, like I've got a few friends that are going. And he was fully in, like, just, you know, straight up and down American kind of guy. And I went, wow, cricket's really making a mark. I was so shocked. It was like really cool, a cool moment to go, okay, this isn't the normal place that crickets play, but this is definitely making a mark.
No, 100%. Like I had a similar experience. I was in Orlando a couple months ago. Went on a golf trip with my boys and we were playing on this golf course and I ran into this guy. So my boys were telling him that I played cricket. So he was like, oh, wow, I watched the Cricket World Cup, you know, when it was down in Florida. And he is born in America. He's an American. He's not like a lot of the expats that go over to America and then obviously, you know, know and appreciate what cricket is. He knew nothing about cricket, but then he saw the World Cup on TV. He saw it in America, in Florida, and yeah, he got into it. He told me about it, and it was refreshing because there you have an American-born citizen, and he is totally abreast with what's going on in the cricketing world. And yeah, that was one of the eye-opening experiences when it came to how quickly the game is growing in the US.
A new segment is coming up right after this, but we're going to take time for a quick break. Okay, we're going to go into the fun part of the podcast because, you know, we can't just have all the serious chat. Let's get into some, like, quick fire questions. This part's called Captain's Call. It's a new segment that we're introducing. Now, you've obviously captained many sides, but it's up to you to decide these scenarios, what you would do.
Okay.
Are you up for it?
Let's hit me with it, man. Let's go.
No, I don't know if you're ready. That wasn't enthusiastic enough for me.
Bring it on, Grace.
Are you on it? Are you ready to go?
I'm ready. Let's go.
Better. I like that energy. Here we go. All right. Okay. You've got a really gun bowler in your side, but he's having a bit of a shocker this day. He's being a bit expensive for your liking. Do you back him in or do you find someone else?
I think it all depends on the situation in the game. Most of the time, you don't go against your banker, man. And if he's a guy who's done it for you on more than one occasion, then you would pretty much back him again. And if it doesn't come off, you say, well, look, he's had a bad day. But then if you've got, let's say you've got a guy who is just under him, and you could say that I could rely on him as well too. So he might be a second option. I would not give it to an inexperienced bowler who's having a good day, who's having a good spell on that day. Again, there might be a situation that it may happen, but you would tend not to do that. But if you can have another senior bowler that is having a decent time on that day, then you might say to yourself, like, I could probably give him that over today and take the pressure off the old stalwart that you would normally rely on. So, yeah, I would say I may look at somebody else, but more often than not, he's probably going to have to suck it up and still bowl that over. But it all depends on the makeup of the team.
All right, team morale's down. You're a bit low. You've had a few losses on the trot. How do you lift the spirits?
Good question. You know, the reason I'm laughing because I'm actually really
intrigued with this one.
Yeah, I've been in a few dress rooms like this, so I'm pretty experienced when it comes to that. Like, but for me, like, I think some honest conversation needs to be had. One, but then you gotta really, really, you know, really find some ways to big up these guys, and it's all individual. I think sometimes doing it as a big group doesn't really hit home the same way if you would pull a guy on a one-on-one and you say to him, look, bro, like, come on, you're this guy, you're better than this. Like, I know what you can produce. Like, you've been a banker for me. Like, and you just try to just, like, boost his ego. Like, just try to G him up. I think from my past experiences, if you do it more on a one-on-one basis, it hits home a little bit more differently than if you do it in a whole team setting. So I think, like, just trying to really sell dreams, man. I believe in selling dreams, man. If you can sell a dream and you can paint a picture, then as a captain, like, you would go down as one of those great leaders. But funny enough, if you know your group really well, you may have other close mates of yours who might get through to a different individual better than you can. So you say to your close mate, look, bro, I need you to go and really talk to John because John, you know, you and John get on really well. So just go and G him up. Get him up for it, man. We need John. So those are the things that you really need to understand about your team and know who's who, what's what, and who can get the best out of the certain individuals.
You get really good at reading personalities. You know what I mean? Like, I think you'd get really good at reading personalities being a skipper because you'd have to, like, know, okay, these people are this kind of personality, these people are this kind of personality, and then, you know, strategize on how you approach those situations.
Yeah, I say to my close friends, I know every single personality trait that there is in this world because I've been through and been around so many different people. I think there's not a personality trait in this world I don't know. The issue that I've had in the past and to date is that certain people aren't mature enough to handle certain things. So it's tough sometimes to get through to people because you want to be honest. I try not to be too harsh, but sometimes honesty is harsh. And a lot of people just can't handle it. And then people take it in the wrong way. So it's tough sometimes in that light. But like I feel as though I know all the different personalities and I know how to deal with certain people. That's why like, when I don't play cricket and when I'm not around cricket, I need to get away from it because it's so toxic at times, man. It's unbelievable how toxic it could be. And it could be very lonesome and very depressing. So I just try to like just shift it, man. Shift it completely and just do some stuff. Let loose, have some fun, party, play golf, spend time with friends and family, and you know, just enjoy.
Blow off steam. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right, I've got a doozy for you. A senior player and a youngster, an up and coming gun. They're butting heads. They're in a fight about something. How do you settle it?
More often than not, the youngster is always wrong. So you've got to tell the youngster. It's easier to say the youngster you're wrong than the senior player, man. And yeah, you gotta really make the younger players understand the environment. All right. And it's tough sometimes coming into new environments, but you need to read the room. And I think if you give younger players too much leeway, then they take advantage of it and they don't understand boundaries. So I think I got to back my senior players because when I'm on the field, when I'm in the heat of the battle, those are the guys I really turn to, man. The younger players are more like co-stars. And I see the senior players as my real stars. And that's how a team is really made up. You got stars, you got co-stars. And I don't get me wrong, on different days, the co-stars who we expect to be co-stars, they become your stars. And then as a senior player, you just got to accept and acknowledge that, look, today I'm a co-star today. I just got to switch my role a little bit today. But that's the dynamic of sport. You know, not every day is going to be a great day for you, but you've got a role to play within, you know, somebody else's success or the team's success. So, yeah, I think in that scenario, I would more often not back the senior player. But there are some situations where the senior players are wrong. And you've got to say, look, bro, you're wrong. I can't support you on this one. And they've just got to understand it.
Just one more break before we hit the final whistle to wrap up the episode. Okay, this is the final part of the podcast called Final Whistle. Quick fire questions and then we're done.
I love that. Hit me with it.
What's changed your mind about something in sport recently?
Honestly, I don't like this whole India-Pakistan beef. You know, I'm seeing this India-Pakistan beef, which goes and stems way beyond the cricket field. It's just sad. Because like there are two powerhouses in world cricket and to see how things have transpired. Like I saw India win the Asia Cup and it didn't go up and accept the trophy. And I just think it's just too much, man. Like these things like shouldn't be in our game, man. Especially if we are ambassadors for the world. And if we're talking about world peace and you know, just making the world a better place, then that's not what you want to see from your idols and your inspirers. Like if you're inspiring a generation, you're inspiring a world, then we've got to find a way to come together. And I could understand it being a massive thing off the cricket field. And don't get me wrong, I get it. It's a long, young years of history behind it. But I think if it is to change, it can start from our influential players, our influential teams on the cricket field. So I think, yes, that can be happening off the field. But I think a way to quieten it and to deaden it is by India and Pakistan maybe joining forces in the sport. I think that would be huge for the context of everything. Because if they can do it on the field, then the two countries could probably say, look, it's done on a sporting level. Maybe we can do it in an everyday level and just, you know, stop this fighting, stop this war between India and Pakistan.
That's a good mindset with it all, because it is hard and it's so sad seeing it transpire, you know? I mean, and it does have that trickle effect culturally too, you know, when you see your idols, and that would go for anyone, even if that was, you know, Australia, New Zealand fighting against each other. It has that trickle down effect, whether you like it or not. So it's definitely a sad moment in time. But, you know, it's obviously difficult for even players to navigate when it's tense right now. I mean, we saw what happened in IPL and PSL this year. Like, it was scary. I was in India at the time, and it was tough. You just didn't know what was going to happen.
Yeah.
But I have great respect for both countries. Like, they're such beautiful people, beautiful cultures. Oh, I just love both countries so much. And I think that's why it hurts everyone in cricket when it is a time like this, because we have so much respect and love for both countries individually that, you know, it's just tough.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. I was in Pakistan at the time, and like, I didn't feel unsafe. I guess my whole thing, like everybody else, was just the uncertainty of being stuck. And that's not fun for anybody. You know, you don't want to be stuck somewhere and you're uncertain of when or if you can get home. But like, I remember Didier Drogba, who's one of my sporting heroes, he was a mastermind behind the Ivory Coast coming together and just trying to plead to their nation to cease fire and stop the violence. And it's one of those moments where you see the power of influence in sportsmen and athletes and influential figures. And I would love to see more of that from a cricketing standpoint between India and Pakistan. Like, I think it's so hard to be in a World Cup, for example, and you've got to try to shift games because you don't want India and Pakistan to play at this place, or India can't come to Pakistan when cricket is meant to be played in Pakistan, or Pakistan can't come to India when cricket is meant to be played in India. I just think it's so wrong. It's one of the things I would love to see change, you know, before I finish playing cricket, because it'd be good to have both nations come together a little bit more. And my thing is, I've played, obviously, and I know both Indians and Pakistanis, and seeing them and knowing them for who they are, like, they're great people. And I know that this whole thing, or this front that they had to put, up in terms of trying not to get too close to Pakistanis. Like, we even see it here now where certain Pakistanis can't be involved in certain teams because they're owned by Indian owners. It's just sad, man, because it just creates a big disparity. It creates a big divide between the entire league and the entire teams, where you want the best. You want the best competition. And if the best is Indians and Pakistanis playing together, then so be it. That is the way the game is meant to be played. That's what we preach and what we talk about. So why not just, you know, ensure that we're, you know, practicing what we preach, in essence, you know, like, bring the game together, grow the game together, and let's have a amicable, healthy, great relationship between all parties.
Yeah, because we're one big cricketing 100. Family at the end of the day. We all come from so many different parts of the world. It'd be nice if we could all come together and you know, be on the same page. All right, do you believe in luck?
Of course, 100%.
More elaborate or just have
Look, I think...
You can't just say 100%.
Look, all right, this is what I'll say to that, Grace. Now, look, I feel as though I get a little bit too deep, but I believe in destiny, all right? I think that we are all here living a predetermined path set up by the Creator. And we have no choice in the matter. This is just our path, and this is what has been handed to us. Now, luck. Yeah, so
Works
luck.
On it.
Yeah, luck is a part of it. Yeah, luck is a part of it, because I look at my life, for example, and I'm like really blessed. I'm healthy. I do a sport and play a sport that I love, and being paid really well to do it. And then I take the flip side of it. Like, I follow a few people on Instagram, for example, who are dyslexic, who are possibly paralyzed. They're different walks of life. So then you say to yourself on one hand, like, why am I blessed to be in this light? And then this other person has drawn the shitty end of the stick, for lack of a better phrase. And I just say to myself, well, that is destiny. Maybe this is my lifetime to have this kind of life. The next lifetime, maybe I may suffer a little bit more. Maybe it might not be as welcoming or not be as blessed as this one. I don't know, but I think there's a little bit of luck to it. And yeah, I think some days when you look at sports and you look at things that unfold, you say to yourself, well, there has to be a little bit of luck involved. There's got to be a lucky element involved at some point. So yeah, I would say there's a little bit of luck, and I have to believe in a little bit of luck. But I think when I look at the general picture, it's all destiny, and we're destined to be where we are when we are destined to be there.
Last one. If you could swap lives with any athlete on the planet right now for a day, who are you swapping with? They could be past or present, by the way.
One athlete I would probably love to swap lives with for one day. I'd love to swap lives with LeBron James for one day, just to play an NBA game as well too, because I feel as though I'm a pretty good basketball player. So I would love to play an NBA game. I just go to one day of his life in terms of the time he wakes up to the time he goes to sleep. I would love to be in that and just feel how much added or extra pressure he has when people always constantly have him under scrutiny. So yeah, LeBron is my guy. I would love to do it.
It'd be cool to feel his aura.
Yeah.
Look around with that aura.
Man.
LeBron James. Everyone look out.
Again, I saw him in Orlando earlier this year. When he did the chalk toss, man, like, you see it on TV, you don't really actually understand it, or you don't really pay as much attention to it. But seeing it live, man, is crazy, man. It's crazy, man. LeBron is a big figure, man. Massive guy. My goat. My goat.
Oh, I love it. Well, Jason, it's been so nice to chat to you. Thank you so much for your time. I really, really appreciate it. And thanks for coming on to Game On with Grace. It's been an honor.
Grace, it's been an absolute pleasure, man. And hopefully we can get that golf game out of the way. And hopefully you don't take my money and I can take yours.
We're going to do it. Oh, what an awesome chat with Jason. He's such a great guy. And what a story he's had. I mean, he's not just been an amazing player. He's led his country on the highest stages. So thank you so much again, Jason. It was such an awesome chat. And honestly, a privilege to have you here on Game On with Grace. Now, if you love this conversation as much as I did, make sure you hit the follow button, like, subscribe, share to all your friends, because we've got so much more to come. We don't want you to go anywhere when we're just getting started. So we cannot wait to see you guys on the next episode. Thank you so much again, and keep competitive.